As you said, my name is Jared Schmidt. I'm working on my master's at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and my project was on the rate of in situ shatter cane cross sorghum hybridization. So first, a little about the two about sorghum and shatter cane. They're actually both the same species, sorghum bicolor, and this includes all cultivated sorghum, as well as a group of semi-wild weedy plants, or shatter cane. The primary differences between the two are height. Shatter cane is a lot taller. It lacks the dwarfing genes present in sorghum. Seed dormancy. Shatter cane seeds have been shown to overwinter and survive and have more dormancy characteristics than sorghum. And seed shattering. Shatter cane falls readily off the panicle, whereas sorghum seed is held tightly to facilitate harvest. And then shatter cane can cross-pollinate with cultivated sorghum and is a problem weed in U.S. row crops. So since sorghum and shatter cane can interbreed and produce hybrid fertile offspring, this hybridization might cause genes from sorghum to be introduced into local shatter cane populations. And that's of particular interest if those traits are conferring some sort of pest or herbicide resistance or a genetically modified trait that could contribute to the invasiveness or success of the weed population. So the objectives of our study were to determine the rate of shatter cane cross sorghum hybridization at various distances from a sorghum source population for pollen source population in the field, actually. And then we also wanted to evaluate the impact of wind direction and speed on this hybridization rate. So the experimental was conducted for 2 years, and it consisted of a 50-meter diameter half circle population of grain sorghum as the pollen source. And this sorghum was homozygous for a dominant gene conferring a dry white midrib. And this midrib appeared white in color. And then the source was maintained with standard agricultural practices. So then at various distances from the source population, we planted groups of four shatter cane seeds, or a hill of shatter cane, at 1, 3, 5, 10, 20, 40, 60, 100, and 200 meters. And these were planted in arcs, concentric arcs at those distances. And then we also planted 10 plants within the source population to evaluate within the population outcrossing. And then these shatter cane plants were from an inbred line that was homozygous for a recessive gene, which was the juicy green midrib, which appeared green in color. And these arcs encompassed 90 degrees of a circle and were positioned such that the prevailing south winds in Nebraska would carry pollen from the source to the receptive shatter cane panicles. And soybeans were planted around the arcs to maintain a canopy architecture similar to sorghum. This is a aerial photograph of the field experiment in 2009. You can see in this area here is the sorghum source population. It's a 50-meter diameter half circle. And then at various distances from that were the concentric arcs. These are just alleys we cut to facilitate access. And the shatter cane are actually just to the inside of that. This is a little closer view of it. And you should be able to see right there and there and there are the shatter cane hills we had. So we monitored the sorghum to determine when pollination was beginning. And at this date, we then went to each shatter cane hill and evaluated it to determine if there was a panicle at a hill that was also beginning to pollinate or receptive. And if that was the case, then we marked it with flagging tape. And we did this on three separate occasions in 2008 and then on two separate occasions in 2009. The sorghum was still pollinating, so we went out a few days later and marked more shatter cane if they were then just becoming receptive. And we tracked them as a marking date or marking period. The end date for each marking period was determined by just visually evaluating the shatter cane panicles to determine when pollination was complete. And the sorghum was shedding pollen for the entirety of all three marking periods in 2008 and both in 2009. We measured wind direction with an anemometer located in the source, and we analyzed the wind data from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. And this is when sorghum pollen has been shown to be most viable and most of the pollination occurs. Measurements were taken every 10 seconds and then averaged hourly. So then once the shatter cane seeds pollinated, we allowed them to mature somewhat and then bagged them before shattering and to enable seed collection. Then the following summer, we took 720 seeds six replicates of 120 seeds each and planted them out in 25-foot rows in a field using a cone planter. So it equated to about 5 acres of shatter cane in rows. Then we counted each row and then scored the emerged shatter cane to determine if they were green or white midrib. And outcrossing rate was simply determined by dividing the number with white midrib by the total number emerged. This is a picture of the phenotype with the white midrib here. And this one here would be the phenotype with the green midrib. They were very easy to distinguish. I don't think there was a lot of error in our ability to phenotype. The white was very evident and stuck out, as you can see even here in a row. They also had a little bit, since they were a hybrid, they had a lot of times a little wider leaves and were even a little taller. So, so these are the wind results for the first marking period in 2008. And this graph shows the slice represents the proportion of wind that was blowing toward that direction. So this would be the proportion that was blowing toward the north. And then the colors represent here the relative speeds that occurred. So as you can see there, we had quite a bit of wind away from our arcs toward the south, but we also had a good proportion of the wind blowing to the north and somewhat the northwest. And then if you look at this outcrossing results figure here, anytime you see a dot here, that represents where we had a receptive shatter cane panicline evaluated during that marking. So then the colors represent how much outcrossing we saw. So the black dots here represent no outcrossing, and then as the colors increase, more outcrossing occurred. So we had in the 200 meter ring, we saw some outcrossing in the direction we had most wind there, the north to northwest direction. And then as we got closer to the source, we saw outcrossing increase. Here's the wind results for the second marking. Again, we saw a significant proportion in the direction away from our arcs, but we also had some to the northwest and north-northwest, as well as a little bit to the northeast there. And the results for the second marking, again, we saw some outcrossing at the 200 meter in the direction that we had most wind and increased as we got closer to the source. We also had an unusually high level of outcrossing noticed in this one and in the third marking, and I'll talk about those a little bit later. The wind results for the third marking, we had wind in a variety of directions there, but we had perhaps the greatest speed and a fairly good proportion in the northwest direction. Also had a fairly good proportion in the northeast. And if you look at the results for the third outcrossing, or third marking, we saw, again, outcrossing at 200 meters in the direction of most wind, and again, increased as we got closer to the source. So this is the summary of results we saw in 2008. Within the source, we saw an average outcrossing percent of 3.16%. And the maximum rate we saw for an individual was 8.5%, and we did see outcrossing at all 10 hills we evaluated. As we increased distance from the source, we declined exponentially out to 200 meters, where we saw 0.09% outcrossing, and with the highest for any individual panicle evaluated at 2.41%. And in 2008, we saw 9 of the 73 panicles had some amount of outcrossing in them. In 2009, we had a far greater proportion of the wind was blowing in the general direction of our arcs. As you can see here, we had no wind blowing to the south. Almost all of it was blowing in the northerly directions, with the greatest going in the north-northeast direction there. And as you can see, in 2009, we had much greater outcrossing. We saw outcrossing in quite a significant proportion of the hills evaluated at 200 meters, and we had outcrossing increasing as close to the source with quite a few panicles evaluated over 7 or even over 10%. For the second marking, we had similarly a high proportion of the wind to the north toward our arcs and not as much to the south. Second marking, we saw, again, quite a high proportion of the hills evaluated at 200 meters with some amount of outcrossing. And over here we saw kind of an area with not nearly as much, a lot of 0%. Summary of results for 2009. Within the source, we saw a much greater than 2008. We saw 16% average outcrossing rate. The highest rate we observed for an individual was 26.68%. the same trend occurred where it decreased exponentially from as distance increased, but at 200 meters we saw 0.34% outcrossing, which was considerably more than the 0.09 we saw in 2008. Another thing to mention was that 30 of the 73 panicles we evaluated at that distance had outcrossing in 2009, whereas only 9 of the 73 in 2008 showed it. So overall, we had the outcrossing rate within the source as 3.6% and 16.2% relatively in 2008 and 2009, quite a bit more in 2009 again. And the greatest outcrossing rate for an individual within the source population was 8.5% and 26.7% respectively. And as expected, as distance from the source increased, the overall rate of outcrossing decreased. Two of the panicles we evaluated in 2008 had unusually high levels of outcrossing. We saw a 40% and a 67% outcrossing. We think it was quite a bit cooler that year. We planted a little bit later, and this might be to environmentally induced protogeny, which is where basically the plant's female receptive before it's male pollinating. Or it could be to genetic factors like protogeny or male sterility. But we only saw it in two of the panicles we evaluated, and we evaluated over 600 of them, so I'm not as concerned about it. In 2008, 9 of the 73 panicles evaluated at 200 meters showed some amount of outcrossing, with the highest individual having 2.4%. Now, in contrast, in 2009, we saw 30 of the 73 panicles at 200 meters having some amount of outcrossing, but the highest individual was similar with 2.6% outcrossing. And as we expected, that rate of outcrossing is highly dependent on weather factors such as wind direction and proportion in that direction, as well as source strength. We thought that in 2009 we had a little better stand of sorghum, and it pollinated more uniformly, so perhaps that also contributed some of the increased outcrossing we saw. But with that, I will glad to take any questions.
Yeah. In physics, surface of physics, you have a static layer, a boundary layer, and then you have your movement layer above it if you talk about wind. The concentric paths in the concentric circles, do you think that there's enough disturbance that may influence and actually potentially disturb the pollination further out, simply because you have all of a sudden a disturbance in that surface layer between the soybeans? You have basically a ground area, and then you have soybeans again?
Yes, and I don't know if it'll show up here. We didn't cut alleys at the closer ones because of that. We thought that pollen would probably get above that boundary layer once it got out to 40 meters. Basically, this was to facilitate our ability to get into that field, because it, you know, when this is 250 meters from here to here, that was about the same, and it was going to be very difficult to just walk around and collect panicles and stuff without having an access road or path. So that was our basic motivation there, but we tried to counteract that by not cutting them closer before the pollen we thought would get above that layer by 40 meters, but that is certainly a valid concern.
What do you think about sorghum's potential for genetic engineering?
Well, certainly these data aren't the only thing that's important when considering potential for genes to be introgressed. There's other factors like fitness, selection coefficients, overwintering, survival. And then particularly when considering a transgene, the selection coefficient of that transgene or how that gene affects it. So, you know, it's really difficult to say on a broad spectrum whether or not what I think about it. I guess a more specific case would be needed.
But you're pretty comfortable to argue that zero doesn't exist in this case?
Yes, I would be pretty comfortable to argue that, unless you put some sort of barrier that prohibited. Another thing that may be worth mentioning is this isn't necessarily the outcrossing rate of the population as a whole. This is the outcrossing that can occur when the two are flowering synchronously. So, you know, there's some other factors that could mitigate it to some degree. Thank you.